In today's quest, we learn why the pen is not always mightier than the sword. This is the Quest for Power. Welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. So we're just going to leap right into it. So if you want to expand your power and your influence over the realm, review us at podchaser.com. So we will read any 5-star reviews that you leave for us at Podchaser at the end of every show. So again, I say help leave your mark on history, the kingdom, and I say the podcast and our hearts. Follow the Podchaser link in the show notes and leave us a 5-star review or just other feedback in general. Feedback is wonderful. We want to improve so that way we don't die off like Rome. Podchaser.com. Let's go.
Also, if you want, you could just email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. Start up a dialogue. Maybe eventually we can start building up a community of like-minded individuals who love history, who love talking about kings, queens, and kingdoms, and castles, and palaces, and all the stuff in between. Well, with all of the nonsense out of the way, what have you been up to, Scott? We've actually not been talking as much this week per normal.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of D&D, working on D&D, and, you know, that's just fine and dandy. I've got, like, the campaign, of course, that I'm running, that I'm working on, so hopefully going to be some good treats, because we've had a distinct lack of Dungeons and Dragons in our Dungeons and Dragons game, and I aim at one point or another to fix both of those problems. So yeah,
there's been a lot of roleplay lately, if I recall correct, and like only half the party could be like involved because it was underwater, and like only so many people can go underwater.
Yeah, it's just like it feels really insulting though to have a nautical campaign but not have things underwater.
Oh yeah, so you need an underwater kingdom. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, you gotta have a little bit of everything. It's just that the eternal struggle is that water is the most dangerous part of D&D. Yes. So you're inherently just kind of like putting people at like on edge, mm-hmm. just by existing. So so it's been a lot of just like notes. So a couple good ideas and some really bad ones. Like, you know, it's like I'm working on, when I'm at lunch for work, I'll sometimes like jot down notes of like, oh, this is, you know, either a cool idea, concept. And then I like sketched out like the very beginning of the dungeon. And I was like, oh boy, like this is already like we're getting kind of off the deep end here. So
yeah, I've noticed that a lot, like when I'm like I have the same thing for like the podcast, or like when I was like, oh, another kingdom to look at, I'll like jot down a note on my phone, and I'll have like notes and notes and notes, and then eventually I'll go through it, and like out of like 20 different note pieces, I'll take 5 of them and the rest of them are garbage, but like at the time it's like, this is the thing that is the best.
Yeah. I had to think about like the biggest one is like, how do I not just break the world with some of these like mechanics?
Especially because we're so high level as it is.
Yeah, it's still kind of probably world breaking, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But apart from that, you know, it's like I play in a campaign that I just play in. So there's
nice
fantasy creatures in Detroit.
Oh, that's
modern day Detroit, but fantasy creatures like have like made their way in. So it's urban fantasy. You know, it's pretty cool. I dig it. Again, for that one, it's also a lot of role playing, which is by far like my weakest weakest area as far as like tabletop RPGs go. So
yeah, the problem solving comes a little easier sometimes than the actual role playing itself does, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that. And I think I say I like the kind of the gaming kind of aspect to it, you know. I think like puzzles, combat that is puzzles.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Dungeons, you know. Like I said, it's definitely the video games of old that really speak to me.
Well, what I've been up to is we went and watched the musical Six, and it's about King Henry VIII's six wives, and it's like they have a competition to see who has the worst time with him.
Boy.
So I don't know if you know the way it goes. It goes divorce, beheaded, died, divorce, beheaded, survived is how you can easily remember his six wives.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
They each have like a little characterization, and it's really funny for anyone who
you
likes
said this
history.
Is a musical. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a musical. It's technically a musical, but it's more like a pop concert musical mixed in one. Like there's no overall story. There's just like a really fun atmosphere. It's a 90 minute show. It's a pretty short show. There's no intermission or anything like that.
So they have like a catchy tune to help you remember all the wives, you know, kind of like,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
How like Rent can teach you how many minutes there are in a year.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend checking out the album. It's on Spotify. It's Six, and it is so good. The songs, like the first one, it's called Ex-Wives, and it's amazing because they're like, they start out with like divorced, beheaded, die.
See? There we go.
Divorce,
yeah.
Beheaded, survived, and tonight we are live. And it's like they're like, tonight we're all getting together to complain about Henry VIII, which is fantastic. It's such a fun little setup.
All right, like I said, at least you get a little extra little tidbits of knowledge.
Oh yeah, there was some of the stuff I didn't know before, and I researched, and I'm like, oh my god, that actually did happen. Like the historical throwaway lines were the best part, because like anyone else who doesn't like history, like they would just think of it as a funny little quip. But like if you're a history nerd like I am, you're like, oh my, that it's even more funny because of like where they get it from.
Yeah, and that's honestly, those are usually the best kind of jokes in anything, is like they're like inside jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
And this goes for any like genre or like,
yeah,
if you're someone who at least kind of knows about it, it gets a lot more rewarding. Futurama was also very good at doing stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
the humor
that
was enhanced if you happen to like know about this odd thing, you know. But you didn't feel left out, really, if, like, you didn't.
If you didn't know, they kind of explained a lot for you, but, like, a couple of things were just throwaway lines. Like, one of the girls, like, in the first part of the song, it's the fifth queen, and she gets beheaded because she slept around a lot before. And, like, she just did throwaway lines of, like, what was going on as she was growing up type deal. And things like that. It was also really funny. So highly, highly recommended if you get a chance. But it's gonna be a long time before we get to Mr. Henry VIII. It's going to be probably years, because we have a lot of kingdoms, caliphates, empires to go through until then.
Well, yeah, we can start by just keep on trucking.
Correct. And we're going to bring ourselves all the way back into the Vandal Kingdom over in Africa. And today, you will probably wonder why the episode's called Thrasimund when I stated last week that Gunthamund ascended the throne. And they might be going, whoa, 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 what happened there? Especially to the ones who know way too much about the Vandals.
We lied.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You would be correct, but there just is not enough information to like weave a little narrative that I like try to do that will give any. So I'm just going to give you the little cliff notes to his reign, because it was real quick, real fast, and there just wasn't much on it, because he honestly didn't upset the Romans as much as like Gaiseric did.
You mean there were Romans left to upset?
I mean, that's fair.
There was a Rome left to upset?
there definitely wasn't any like roof tiles in Rome anyway.
That's right. Or yeah, all the metal's gone. Ones.
Yeah, the metal's gone. Anyway, so for a quick little weave through Gunthamun's reign, in 484, if you remember last time, Hunneric passed away, and his nephew Gunthamund was crowned king despite Hunneric trying to kill everyone in his family so his son Hilderic would become king. And this was a very welcome change because the nobility and peasantry hated Hunneric with a burning passion. And he also persecuted Nicene Christians, and he murdered many of his Hastingi family members. So he just made everyone upset. And so Thrasamund, though, right away, he lessened the persecutions of Hunneric. He went, that's a little too much. Maybe we'll dial it back a little bit. We'll just make it very uncomfortable that they're here. And then he stabilized the economy. He started introducing new silver currency with base metals, and this encouraged everyday use. So basically it made the currency like stronger and better. And it was so good that later the Eastern Empire thought it was so brilliant that they adopted it themselves. However, when I was going through the sources, they forgot to mention that he stole this from a later king that we're going to go through, and that is Odoacer, who ends up actually conquering Rome. So the fact that I had to research ahead of, I'm a little ahead in the research, allowed me to realize that. Otherwise, I would have said, oh, yeah, he came up with it himself. Like most things, he ripped it off something.
That's right.
Like kind of we did off Rex Factor, so gotta really thank them for getting this whole party started. With it's almost a genre now of ranking and reviewing things. Yes, that we should. Although Totalius Rankium already did that with the Roman emperors, but we could make up our own kingdom coins. That would be fun. I mean, I am in the Midwest of the United States, so that there's quite a bit of lead around here, but we, yeah, yeah. I don't know if you could peel off enough lead, or maybe from the lead bullets in the Civil War, you just get those and melt those down too. His reign was relatively peaceful since their rivals, the Visigoths, the Ostrogoths, and the Eastern Roman Empire were all engaged in long bloody wars with their own enemies, so they kind of just left the Vandals sit around. He attempted to capture the island of Sicily from the Ostrogoths, but he failed, so didn't really do much there. And then also during his reign, there was starting to be more pockets of rebellion from the Moors, which are a tribe that comes from the Berbers in Africa, and they're going to continue to be a problem all the way through the rest of the kingdom. And then he finally died in 496, supposedly because of a hunting accident.
Supposedly?
Yes, supposedly. Many historians actually believe that if he didn't die in this hunting accident, he may have extended the Vandal kingdom if his life wasn't cut short.
Okay.
So that bodes really well for our next king.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of which, we have the formal ceremony. The heralds enter the room. All rise and do reverence to Thrasamund, first of his name, the peaceful persecutor, king of the Alani and Vandals.
Do, 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 do.
Very, very nice. Thrasamund is the third son born to Geiseric's fourth son, Gento. So you can do those gymnastics, mental gymnastics, if you would like. He was described as a very handsome and cultured man, almost like a Renaissance man, received a classical education in his youth, and he also developed a passion for theological debate, which he will oddly put to great use during his reign, which is, it's one of the more weird kings in the way he goes about certain things. It is in 496 that he is crowned King of the Alani and Vandals. In 500, so 4 years later, he created an alliance with the Ostrogoths by marrying Amala Frida, who is the sister of Theodoric the Great. So now he has tied himself with the Ostrogothic Empire and, you know, an impressive figure of Theodoric. If you remember, Theodoric is the father-in-law to Alaric II, which will come in handy later in the podcast. I don't think they married for love, because Queen Amala Frida came with a considerable dowry of the coastal Sicilian city Lilibaeum, I'm going to go with that pronunciation, and 5,000 armed guards. That's a really nice wedding gift. I would have loved a city as a wedding gift. Not saying that I would have put it to good use. Actually, who knows?
But guards to guard it too.
And guards, like, that would be pretty awesome. I'd be pretty stoked with that gift. And in 7 years later, Thrasimund receives a little call from his new ally, well, not so new anymore, Theodoric, and Theodoric is asking him to defend southern Italy from the advancing Eastern Roman Empire, because they're starting to cause a problem for him. And Thrasimund opened up the message and went, nah, that's really far, I'm really comfy at home. And even though his wife was telling him probably that he's a coward and he should go, he's like, nah, I'm just going to let the Imperial Navy have free reign across Italy. He then forgets about that and doesn't think about it for a while. And then another day when he's chilling in his chambers, another messenger comes up. And he receives notice that the Visigoth kingdom fell to the Franks. And he thought, well, that's a threat out of the way. I didn't have to do anything. His brother Theodoric, on the other hand, was probably pretty ticked that, and you're going to see why. It turns out that the attacks that he was supposed to come to Theodoric's aid stopped Theodoric from saving his son-in-law, Alaric II, our previous king, from the Franks, and therefore he unintentionally or intentionally caused the collapse of the Visigothic Balti dynasty.
What a gem. I mean, they didn't get along anyways. So.
No, they didn't get along, but it's just kind of crazy how, like, when we were, like, going through Alaric's reign, like, that never came up or anything. And then when I'm going through these sources, they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, because of that, that led to a domino effect. And relations with his in-laws didn't improve when he decided to help Alaric's illegitimate son Gesalic, who Theodoric declared a usurper from Alaric's rightful heir Amalaric. Keep all those names going. Who is his legitimate son and happens to be Theodoric's baby grandson. The real reason is that Theodoric is claiming himself as regent while Amalaric is, you know, is growing up, because right now he's a little baby when his father is killed. So he wasn't thrilled that someone actually with somewhat power tried to take over the Visigothic dynasty. So while that all is going on, one reason that we think he may not have helped his new ally is that he was having troubles within his own kingdom. The Moors, who were talked about earlier in Hunteric's episode, were given a massive headaches. He kept receiving reports and pages about constant raids and revolts all along his border from the Berber and the Moors. So he's just, you know, every other day it's probably like, oh yeah, by the way, this town's being attacked. Oh yeah, your borders here are falling away. And he must not have the power to do anything, because it's just like, yeah, he sends out things, but he doesn't seem to have any sort of real significant victory. And in fact, in 523, he gets the devastating news that the Moors achieved a significant victory against the Vandals, and that they sacked the city Leptis Magna, which was a prominent city along modern-day Libya's coast. This was a city that the Vandals sacked when they were on their way to conquering it from Rome. So kind of funny how that happened.
It's a rite of passage. It's a place to stop.
Yeah, it is.
It's a tourist.
That poor city. Well, this, with along of many other stressors, probably led to his death in 523. He died of unknown causes. He didn't piss off the Nicene Christian sources enough for them to invent a horrible death for him like worms that Hunneric received.
That much of a lame duck, huh?
That is all I have on Gunthamund and Thrasaric, or Thrasamund. And that's it.
Wow, it's a short one. Or a short two.
Well, with that all the way out of the way, we're not going to recommend, we're not going to rate Gunthamund because we just don't have enough, but we will rate Thrasamund. Are you ready?
Yeah, with what we got.
Royal power. How well did he acquire, wield, and maintain wealth? He didn't acquire power. The Vandal kingdom was getting pretty weak at this point. Geyseric would be would just be furious at the pathetic state of his kingdom. But despite issues occurring across his borders, he maintained like strength and good order in like the core part of his kingdom near, basically the closer to Carthage you were, the more safer you were.
I mean, that's something, but he's still losing territory and and letting would-be troublemakers for him just run wild. So, you know, a one.
I will also have to give him a one. Yeah, he didn't acquire, he didn't wield, he didn't maintain well.
Yeah, the one is literally just because he didn't lose everything.
Yeah.
So two.
Infamy. What are they famous for? Doesn't have to be true or not. The only thing I can come up with is he neglected an ally, which was very common in these days. And he peacefully persecuted the Catholics in the same way our society like persecutes those who didn't get vaccines or were mastering the pandemic. He just made it really annoying not to be Arian and made it a really benefit to be Arian. And that's it. That's all I got.
So zero?
Zero.
Yeah. Easy.
Religious passion. I got some new information here. We might actually have some decent points. Thrasamund was a very passionate Arian. He prioritized organizing the Arian church and went out of his way to persuade his subjects to convert to Arianism.
All right. So I really was expecting to give him like 1 point, but looks like he's got a little something going after all.
Correct. Yeah. The best way to describe what he did is he peacefully persecuted Catholics. He like made it a disadvantage to stay Catholic all the way up to without killing them or setting them on fire or running them through with a sword. He didn't do any of that. He just went, I'm going to try and annoy you to death until you become Arian. One of the things he tried is outright bribery of money or high positions in Vandal society for people that converted.
Okay.
Criminals would be given the chance to convert to Arianism to avoid punishments, even if the original crime was a capital offense.
Wow. You know, I do love a good get-out-of-jail-free card.
That is. Yeah, so if your neighbor Bob is really annoying you, you can just go kill him and then go, I'll convert to Arianism.
Yeah, what this says is that if I'm a Nicene Christian, I mean, I get one free crime.
Yeah.
So the way I look.
Yeah.
Does that mean also if you're an Arian Christian that you you don't get any free crimes?
I'm guessing. So I bet you it's like, you know how they always do, if you sign up now, you get like 6 months off, or like you get first
credit card reward.
Yeah, but like, you know, everyone who already has it, no one cares. Phone companies are notorious for this, and like
you know, I guess companies. It's or it's the other way around, is that they very much like you know, they push crimes a lot on people who are Nicene, you know, like, yeah, yeah. It's kind of, it'd be like the equivalent of like us actually enforcing jaywalking, you know, like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like you're for the most part, you're only really enforcing jaywalking if the cop is like really bored or, you know, or they really got a bone to pick with that guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They're like, he's guilty, but I don't know why, but
yeah, you got
to
stick him
guilty.
With something.
Yeah. He needs something.
Yeah, this man needs Jesus, or actually in this case it'd be he needs Jesus, but like separate Jesus.
Yes.
not God and Jesus being the same person.
Yeah,
kind.
Nope, he needs the separate individual Jesus.
Yeah.
He also organized and participated in public theological debate with Nicene scholars. Could you imagine this? A king being like, because, you know, normally kings go around and go, you will convert or I'll just run you through with my sword. But no, he gets all up there and he's like, we're going to get a nice little debate. He invited like Nicene scholars and set
yeah.
it all up.
Well, you and I already talked about the productiveness of debates.
Yes.
But here's the other one that's like an odd thing is that it doesn't really matter because are you ever really, if you're set up in a debate against a king, are you ever really going to debate and try and beat him? Like, you know, I mean, he's shown himself to be a really tame guy, but like, do you really, really want to push that? Like,
I mean,
you better be willing to die for that faith and die on that hill, because
that is,
you know,
true.
There's a long precedent of, or not that long, but a pretty long precedent of kings who would just, you know, have you killed, exiled, etc. if you were to just like not
yeah,
play
burned,
along with a what is
stake.
Probably more of a phony show debate, even if
yeah.
it were real. Like, again, who in their right mind is gonna like truly battle a king into the ground unless they're willing to die for it?
Well, if they're Nicene scholars, chances are they're highly religious.
Yeah,
that
but
they
again,
would be willing to be a martyr for their cause. But again, this guy, he was very clear. He went to everything but putting a sword into you or threatening you to make you.
Yeah, I still wouldn't. I'm not willing to take that risk.
Yeah.
So
and,
just kind of an odd thing.
Yeah.
He's
well,
Socratesing people.
Yeah. So you think like he did all of this effort, right, to convert people. It's got to make somewhat of a change. It made zero. Nothing.
Depressing.
The religious makeup of the Vandal Kingdom did not significantly change at all. Predictable, but depressing.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of religious passion. That is our category. It's not if he was successful at it, but he clearly was very, very passionate.
He's fairly passionate. Not like, again, I have to admit, at least in my mind's eye, is like either you either that or like, because it strikes me as someone being more passionate about something if they're willing to kill other people for it. But
I mean, that is true. I will take off some points because violence tends to mean you're a little too passionate about,
yeah, or crazy or you just want to kill people.
Yeah, that you know. You have that too.
It's there's kind of an odd line drawn somewhere, but we're not psychologists, so we're not going to be able to analyze this guy's motivations properly.
Yeah,
but yeah, he gets his marks a little bit,
especially with like fragments of sources. It's not even like we would get a full court case of full information on what this guy. So what are you thinking on this one?
You know, like he's somewhat passionate, but again, it feels like that this is the lazy king, the king who does everything like mostly half-assed. This was slightly less half-assed.
It seems like with the church he was not half-assed. He really, like, when I say he prioritized organizing the Arian church, like the rest of his kingdom he did not care about as much as he cared about the church.
Yeah,
and like he would go, like he would ignore royal matters to try and deal with issues that are occurring in the church and things like
yikes.
That.
I'll give him a 7.
I'm going to give him a 9. If he would have killed people, that'd be a 10. But he really, I mean, if there is something that this guy was, he was very religious and had a lot of passion for it.
Yeah. I mean, at least he's got a little policy to back him up. Probably should have taxed, like, people into the ground, you know, or something. Like, he, yeah. like, you know, Nicene churches get taxed, like, you know, it's obscene amounts of money.
I don't know if he, like, yeah, because the previous king before him, I keep thinking it's Hunneric, but it's not. It's Gunthamund. He, like, relaxed a little bit. So, yeah, maybe there actually were those kind of churches and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you're right. All right, I'll bring it down to an 8. We are going to have people who are literally going to create an inquisition for religion. So
that's right. You gotta think about the future expansion.
Yeah.
All right. So 7 and 8 for 15.
Not too bad. I think that's his best category. All right, this one's out of 5. It's for stability. There was less violence because of religious persecution, but the Moors were having free reign around his borders, and a city was sacked. Yep. Not good.
That's pretty bad. Give him a 1 for our philosophical and political stability. Yeah, that's it. But everything else sucked.
I'll give him a 2. 1 for kind of holding the internal part, and then 1 for not killing everyone over religion. He'll get a point for that.
All right, total of 3.
Royal demise. Rate how interesting they died. Like I said, I got nothing.
0.
0.
If he's got nothing, probably wasn't interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Dynasty. All right, so I do not know if he had any children with his wife, Amala Frida, but he did have coins. And you can see the the beautiful work of art that on our little screen here.
I think it's great. It's hard to tell with all the, like, the ridges on this guy's face. You're like, where are the lips and where's the chin kind of thing? Is that... It's kind of funny. But no, yeah. All in all, actually, it's not that bad for, you know, how... I actually don't know how they would have made coins back then. They probably would have just had casting and...
Yeah, I'm assuming.
And they probably just broke them, you know, use, like... They just, you know, cast them and then broke the edges, you know?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and post this on along with his episode for those to see on Facebook if you want to check it out. It's not too much to see, but if you want to see a coin, there it is. He's kind of a placeholder king. He didn't make much of an impact. He could have never existed, and I don't think history would have changed. If there was just a blank spot, that's it. The only thing is his wife ends up being a thorn in the side of the next king.
Yeah, that's not really... Yeah, I'm giving him a 0. I've already forgotten his name.
I'll give him a 1 because he left a coin behind.
All right.
How much points we got?
A 9 and a 12 for a total of 21.
Whew,
whopping... You know, blackjack.
He can barely drink.
That's right. If you had 1 year for every score we get, every point we give you. And also, depending on where you live.
Yeah. All right. So the question that we've all been waiting for, should he be crowned High King? Should he become a minor lord? Or does he deserve to be burned at the stake?
We're gonna run out of logs here.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Another one, add another one to the pile.
And another one bites the dust. Yeah. Burned.
Done. Well, That's all we got for Thrasamund. Hope you enjoyed that show. If you do, please let us know at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. Otherwise, if you want to help us out and give us a review and help us grow and expand our little village into a kingdom, that would be also wonderful. And if you don't know what to say, just tell us who your favorite king or queen is, why they fascinate you. Maybe I'll do some little research and we could get a little segment in the podcast of future kings and queens. So that way, if you are obsessed with Henry VIII, we can talk about him for a hot second before we get into the actual kings, especially on these slower episodes where the king isn't really much.
All right. Well, but we have one more. Who's going to be next?
Who is going to be next? I don't know if you remember me previously saying that we had Hunneric killed everyone and couldn't instill his son on the throne. After two kings go by, his son Hilderic finally ascends the throne, and his episode's going to be a lot of fun. It's not really long, but he, let's just say, is really good at making others angry with him.
He's really good at being really bad. Yeah. Short and sweet story. Things we can look forward to next time.
Yes. And then after that, we'll start getting into some longer, more juicier kings.
All right.
Well, until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!